I'm Lizzie O'Leary, and this is The Takeaway. We round out the hour today by talking about another piece of our coronavirus reality, the pressure to get stuff done in this moment. Now, the pressure for self-improvement, productivity is nothing new, but during this pandemic, a lot of people are bombarded with articles featuring tips for staying productive during quarantine, endless social media posts about our friends' new love of homemade sourdough bread, and reminders about the huge achievements by Shakespeare and Newton when they were quarantined hundreds of years ago. But hang on, those comparisons can be really damaging. It's hard enough to deal with the everyday mental strains of life during a pandemic without having to feel inadequate for not taking up a new hobby or religiously doing home workouts. Joining us now to talk about why we feel the need to be productive during this time and why it's okay not to be is Taylor Lorenz, a technology reporter at The New York Times who covers internet culture, and David Bluestein, a counseling psychology professor at the Boston College Lynch School of Education and Human Development. Thank you both for joining us.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Thanks for having me.
David, first off, sort of on a psychological level, how can living through something like this affect our ability to get through the day? You know, from a mental health perspective, some people say they feel more tired, less focused. Is that normal?
Absolutely. The pandemic is actually a highly stressful state. I mean, we all know that. And the idea that working from home or being at home for an indefinite period of time, that being a kind of comfortable space, on one level, that is accurate. But the reality is the world outside of us has changed dramatically. Many of the crises that we're facing are interconnected: loss of life, loss of the illusion of health, loss of work, loss of relational contact with others. This is not a typical normal state of affairs. So working from home is actually a very stressful experience at this point. Having our children home and the expectations that you noted earlier are in many ways very unrealistic. The psychological energy required to maintain ourselves, to maintain our capacity to be caring toward ourselves, toward others, it takes a tremendous amount of energy.
It seems, anecdotally at least, that this pressure seems to affect more people who are not essential workers and who are not parents, sort of trying to teach school at home. David, does what you are seeing reflect that stratification?
Yes. I think what we're seeing actually is work has always been a place where inequality has been most apparent. And this inequality has become much more clear during these last few months. We have people who are working remotely, and that's kind of become part of the media narrative. Mm-hmm. But we also have people who are out of work. Millions of people in this country are out of work. We have other millions of people who are seriously in danger of losing their jobs. And then we have the essential workers. So we really have a multifaceted nature of work at this point, and it's really hard to generalize. But everyone is facing the same multiple crises at the same time.
Taylor, you cover internet culture and this kind of social media narrative that we could be doing something more productive outside of work. How do you see that manifest online?
Yeah, well, I think social media is all about sharing what you're doing and seeing what other people are doing. So I think a lot of people have felt like, you know, they log on to Instagram and they see their friend, for instance, cooking a home-cooked meal or baking bread or doing that workout push-up challenge, you know, and tagging their friends. And it makes them feel like they're not living up to it, you know, that they aren't being as productive or getting as much done as their friends on social media are.
Did people tell you why they felt like they were struggling with these feelings? What did they tell you when you were doing your reporting on these issues?
Well, one thing that a lot of people said is that it was really hard to log off. I think that the boundaries between work time and home time have been completely obliterated. You know, a lot of us rely on platforms like Slack or chat messaging, email. These are all things that make it really hard to log off at the end of the day. And we have our cell phones, you know, into the night. So I think a lot of people are working longer hours than ever. And they're just more responsive to their phones now than ever because they're stuck at home.
David, where psychologically does this pressure come from? This sort of need both to keep up with other people, but also to feel like we are trying to be our best selves in the middle of something terrible?
I think it's a complicated kind of set of challenges. First off, many people in our culture do live with these expectations of achievement and accomplishment. That's kind of part of the kind of postmodern narrative about work. I think that needs to be reinvented. I think that this crisis gives us an opportunity to rethink how we engage in work, how we engage in relationships. I actually believe that this push toward more and more achievement needs to be revisited in a very dramatic way. This crisis is teaching us a lot of lessons. I mean, some of the lessons are ones we'd rather not have learned, which is it's shattering the illusion of safety and health. But I also believe that we have an opportunity to rethink how we engage in work and to pull back on this intense desire for achievement, and also the idea of kind of competing with others, which I believe is kind of evoked by social media. And also by, you know, these different stories of people baking bread, Chris Cuomo coming on CNN with 101 fever. I mean, these are not good models for us, really. I mean, I respect Chris Cuomo a lot, but I do think that people do need to take a break. People need to be compassionate toward themselves and toward others. I think our goal is to survive this and to maintain our relationships and help these relationships grow, but not to push ourselves so much.
Taylor, how does this shake out generationally? Because obviously millennials get tagged with a lot of things, but thinking structurally, people who are millennials and younger graduated from school into an uncertain economy. They're now living through a pandemic. Do you think this is stratified by age?
It's absolutely stratified by age. You know, I spoke to this woman, Anne Helen Peterson, who's writing a book on millennial burnout. And millennials, like you said, they don't all have kids yet, but some of them do have young kids who are at home. It's sometimes their first child. They're feeling this intense pressure to do everything right, to do everything perfect. A lot of other millennials are still, you know, young enough. They're not totally married, but they're just getting on their feet. So, you know, they're not in that point in their career where they can kind of log off for a little, or, you know, they're kind of struggling to make it. Some of them are working in the gig economy. It's very stressful. And, you know, this is millennials' second recession, you know, in their young adult lives. So I think it's all very overwhelming for them in particular. That doesn't mean that it's not just as stressful, you know, for a lot of older generations in different ways, but for millennials, I think this is hitting harder. They're also more connected to technology. You know, millennials, it's harder for them to log off. They spend more time on social media, and they spend more time on their phones. So it's, you know, it's all of those feelings are really coming up.
Flipping this around a little bit, David, you know, are there benefits to making the sourdough starter or trying to, I don't know, draw more, read more? Is there value in trying to cultivate things that you wouldn't necessarily have the time for in normal life?
Absolutely. And I think people are using this time as an opportunity to kind of do things differently. I guess my main message is that there is no one right way to go through a pandemic. People have to find their own way through it. And yeah, for some people, trying new things is going to be wonderful. Baking bread. For me, I'm doing different kinds of writing projects. I find that actually very meaningful. And those can be very adaptive ways to manage the anxiety and stress of this period. Work serves as an important psychological aspect of our lives, as do leisure activities, as do relationships. So we each need to find our own pathway through this. And I think that's really critical. And I think one of the big takeaways here is going to be for people to just kind of relax, figure out what works for them, discuss it with their families and friends, but really look deep into themselves and find their own way of making meaning in this new reality.
Taylor, you and I and people like us maybe have played a role in some of this. Why do you think so many media outlets feel this need to say, oh, here's what you can do with your quarantine free time?
Well, I think people like to read these articles. People want to, you know, read about all the things that they could do. It's inspiring. And I think it, you know, encourages people to, you know, maybe take up that hobby or project. And But yeah, but I do think that there was kind of this overwhelming amount of articles right after the pandemic hit that I think stressed a lot of people out.
And maybe sort of the suggestion that you would have now is what?
Well, my suggestion for media companies might be to give people a little bit more like how to's, you know, not necessarily frame things as 10 things to get done in quarantine, but more, you know, here's how to cut your own bangs if you want to, or how to needlepoint if you want to, and not necessarily like encourage people to try to be so productive in this time.
Taylor Lorenz is a technology reporter at The New York Times covering internet culture. And David Bluestein is a counseling psychology professor at the Boston College Lynch School of Education and Human Development. Thank you both very much for joining me.
Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Hi, this is Kathy Gregg from Chicago. And I navigate the feelings of not being productive enough by avoiding social media where everyone's doing these cute things or singing to Stephen Sondheim or whatever it is that they're doing from home that just make me feel like I'm not good enough. And I've taken up doing painting, even though I'm not a painter by any means. Just things that are things that I've always wanted to do in downtime, and just, I guess, keeping my own counsel on what productiveness is. And when I don't feel it, trying not to be guilty.
Hi, my name is Larry. I live in St. Paul, Minnesota. I'm 74 years old and I'm a musician. I've been playing music and connecting with people with music all of my life. I've been going out on my back deck. I've been just playing music, just singing from my porch 4 days a week. And if people want to come and listen, they do. I feel like I'm doing something good, spreading some joy, putting a good vibe out into the universe during this dark time.
I've had a little practice fighting feelings of needing to be productive for a couple of years now in reading about capitalism and what it does to our brains and our hearts. So I feel a little bit prepared for this and have really been leaning into not doing anything at all and find that I'm still doing so much, and letting that go has been really nice, hard but nice. And I hope that everybody else is able to do what they need to do to feel sane. This is Caitlin calling from the Vineyard.
This is Ira Flatow, host of Science Friday. For over 30 years, the Science Friday team has been reporting high-quality science and technology news, making science fun for curious people, by covering everything from the outer reaches of space to the rapidly changing world of AI to the tiniest microbes in our bodies. Audiences trust our show because they know we're driven by a mission to inform and serve listeners first and foremost with important news they won't get anywhere else. And our sponsors benefit from that halo effect. For more information on becoming a sponsor, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.